Okay, the green piece of paper this morning. There are many churches who use the worship space for or like an auditorium, and it doesn't seem to be like a sanctuary. Are there reasons to call where we worship a sanctuary? Is there supposed to be a difference between a sanctuary and an auditorium in worship? Well, I jotted some notes down today, and I started off saying, you know, some months back I preached on this topic, but I'm not going to regurgitate that. In fact, I didn't even go pull it back out of the file. I'm not going to regurgitate that sermon. And a few weeks ago, we talked about big box and storefront churches. And this might kind of fit along with that. And we're familiar with how many of the big box churches have stages with lights, cameras, action. And they turn it into a concert venue, right? And then you get an hour and 20 minutes, not an hour, on some of those guys. In many instances, what happens there is the vernacular of the day, street and all, shows up on the stage, right? That's the order of the day, shock factor, or make people laugh, or make people think, hey, I'm just as hip as you are, although I don't know that that's necessarily hip, which might lead some people to wonder, is there anything or any place that's sacred anymore, right? Especially folks about 50 years old and up, right? Trying to be delicate there. Well, quite frankly, most of the time I'd be fine with high church music. But I also like some other stuff too. But then I guess we have to ask, first of all, what is a church? If we're going to worship, what is a church? Well, do what? Well, just where fewer gathered.
Two more
right? Okay, the church gathers to worship. Leon Macbeth is a spiritual community. It's a community. We call it a family or a koinonia, a fellowship or a community. Like I said before, though, I think I just shake my head when I ride by things. And there are some places it'd be koinonia fellowship. And I'm saying, that's redundant. Koinonia means fellowship. But it's a spiritual community. We come together spiritually. We're called together in spirit. It's a believing community, is it not? We come together because we're believers. It's a worshiping community. That's what we come for. In fact, earlier last century, W.T. Connor, who was a Baptist minister and a theologian, kind of upset a lot of folks, especially during the revival era, when he said, well, quite frankly, the primary purpose of the church is not evangelism, it is to the proper worship of God. End quote. And I have held on to that for a long time, though I wasn't around when he said it. I did read it later, and I didn't read it on the internet. I read it in print.
Well, Jesus driving out the money changers gave an indication of whether it's a holy place or not.
Well, the money changers in the temple, Jesus, that's right, Ed, driving them out. Although they weren't in the temple per se. They were in the courtyard, and they were probably in the court of the Gentiles. But you could hear, there was not that much distance. You could hear what was going on in the court of the Gentiles in the front of the temple. And all that cacophony, love that word, that cacophony of sounds that went on. Plus, if the wind shifted and they're selling goats and sheep and pigeons, you know, it could kind of disturb a worshiper if it blew the wrong way. Door on the temple would be like a wind tunnel. The animals that were sacrificed would typically be sacrificed. Sometimes, depending on the celebration, they would sacrifice them just inside the doorway and then bring them back out. But you would bring it, you'd hand it to the priest, they would take it to the altar, one of the altars, whether it was a fire altar or another altar in the sanctuary proper, sacrifice the animal, throw the blood, Jesselyn, throw the blood at the base of the, because she, you remember, she used to talk about all this blood and guts, when are we going to stop studying that? Throw the blood along the base of the altar and then they'd bring the animal back out. Except when the right shank was to be kept by the priests to consume, they'd cut off the right shank and they'd bring you the rest of it. with that sacrifice. Now, evangelism, yes, Jesus did give us a biblical mandate to make disciples, right? And to baptize people in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. But the primary thing is to worship. If you don't worship God, then what do you have about which to evangelize? Really? There's a story that Leon Macbeth told in an article he wrote about a West Texas Baptist church last century. And it was a new young pastor, and he came in, and he led the faithful in praise and prayers and Bible reading and preaching. And people really seemed to be listening. They nodded and prayers of commitment and that kind of thing. But when the invitation was given, nobody came forward. And afterwards, I guess trying to make the preacher feel a little bit better, there was a layman, a deacon, standing there next to him. He said, "Well, preacher, nothing happened tonight, but you keep on trying. Maybe something will happen next time." And the pastor said, "What do you mean nothing happened?" And the layman was surprised. He said, "Well, nobody came forward at the invitation, so nothing happened." You know, we have, for so long, we have put success and church success and service, whether the service is successful or not, we tie that to somebody walking the aisle instead of what people learn and how they come to understand and worship God. We forget that first and foremost, the purpose of the church is the proper worship of God. We can do that all kinds of places. Yes, God made nature. You can find evidence of God throughout nature. God made the nature that gets turned into those places where you chase a little white ball. But most of the time, the only time people use God's name on the golf course is when there's a bad shot and they don't use it very nicely, right? In other words, some of them need to pay a buck. They're worshiping that little ball, right? Now, I play at golf. But, you know, I've enjoyed playing golf, but, you know, that's not the sanctuary in which to worship. I have watched so many things. In fact, by the way, when I left church today, 12:35, just before I got to the connector, and I don't know if they'd been fighting and one was chasing the other or something was chasing it, but two bucks ran out of the woods right there at the connector, ran out of the woods on that side just before you get to the bridge, crossing right up there. Good thing nobody was in front of me. No, and I made sure I didn't hit him with the car. But, we can worship in a lot of different places. However, the proper worship of God has been seen as tied to a place where they gathered people, right? Even in pagan religions, when they worshiped, did sacrifices and other things, fertility rites and all kinds of things in honor of their god or goddess, they didn't go off somewhere by themselves. They came together as a group, recognizing that where they were in their minds was tied to a deity. Sanctuary. How do you define sanctuary? A temple? What other words would you use to define a sanctuary?
When Foster Mother was taking Esmeralda up to the palace to find a sanctuary, I guess it means a sacred place where nothing could be touched.
Right. Yeah, it was a place of refuge with Quasimodo. It was a place of refuge because he couldn't be touched there. A sacred place, though. A quiet place. That's right. A sacred place. In the Old Testament, sanctuary, the word for sanctuary, designates a holy place that is different from the rest of the world around. It's a designated holy place which derives its sanctity from its association with the presence of God. It's sacred because it is related to the presence of God. Now, yes, God can be anywhere and is anywhere and everywhere, but the focus in a sanctuary in the Old Testament was on that place where God could be and often was met in a special way. And it was a place where you came corporately. Yes, you could come individually. Samuel's mother Hannah was in that, in there next to the altar in the shrine, at Shiloh where Eli was the priest, and he came in. She was in there by herself, and he got all upset, A, because this is a woman right in there next to the altar, and B, he thought she was drunk because she was one of those people that prayed. I mean, it says that prayed moving her mouth, but no sound came out. And she said, I'm not. I'm pouring my soul out to God. Why was she there? Because she recognized that sanctuary, and it was a shrine, a sanctuary, a building, or a tent. That place was a sacred place where she could meet God in a special way. And so in the Old Testament, it's that presence of the deity. It's also described in the Old Testament as a place of refuge, as we've already talked, and a place of asylum. Not crazy. Not rubber rooms and those funny jackets where the sleeves buckle in the back. But asylum as in a place where you could be protected. Where you had that protection, right? So that's what sanctuary involves. The primary use in Hebrew scripture of sanctuary was in reference to a recognized place of worship where tradition often placed or said a theophany of God had occurred. A theophany is a physical manifestation of God. So there were altars that became places of sanctuary all over. Shechem was a very important one. Bethel, also known as Bethel, house of God. When Jacob wrestled with the angel all night long, and he named the place, he built a small altar of stones and named the place Peniel, face of God. So there were places like that all over where it was recognized or thought God had appeared here in a special way. The tabernacle, which was the tent of meeting that was built during Moses' time. The tabernacle was revered as a holy place that was blessed with the promised presence of God. The tabernacle, if you go and read in Exodus, where God gives the instructions on how to build that special tent, and it gets very redundant because it repeats over and over and over again how many rings on this pole and that pole and how many poles. Exodus. Ryan, no, that's a basketball court. No, that's a basketball court. No, that's 90 feet. No, you have it repeated in Leviticus and again in Deuteronomy. But the lengthy description, those are the Reader's Digest condensed versions. The lengthy description is in Exodus. And I mean, every veil, and it's sewn with this kind of thread, with this kind of image on it, and with this kind of ring, which goes on this kind of pole, which is attached to that pole by this, and just very detailed. And then you get down half a chapter away, and they describe the other side of it exactly the same way, with this kind of thread and this kind of ring and all that kind of stuff.
I got a question. Why do we need to know all that?
I've asked that before.
Well, why do we need to know all that about how the tabernacle was put together? Well, but though you have to remember, within Judaism and the Hebrew Scriptures, they're very detailed and they do things meticulously that way. And these were directions given by God as to how to do this. And interestingly enough, the tabernacle and then later the temple is patterned after the tabernacle. And a lot of Christian churches, especially in the early eras when they were started being built and the cathedrals and all that, they're actually patterned after the way the tabernacle was set up. And it's actually arranged in varying degrees of holiness. Where the altar was in the Christian church up front, where the priests served or the ministers served, that was reminiscent of the Holy of Holies that housed the presence of God and the Ark of the Covenant, the most sacred place where the high priest could only go once a year. Then you've got
the earliest word about that would have been like
a tent within a tent within right, and the earliest and you, the and their specific dimensions. The Holy of Holies is to be a cube.
So that's why they were telling them about.
Yes.
Until
Solomon built the temple, and then it was built. But where there were curtains before, now you've got walls. And the Holy of Holies, the Debir, the Holy of Holies, it housed the Ark of the Covenants and Covenant and Presence of God, was a 30-foot cube. And then you've got the sanctuary proper, or the court. The sanctuary proper, where the priests went, and eventually under Solomon, where only the priest, the king, and his invited guests could get. It's only later that regular Jews could go in there, males only. And then you've got the court area out at the edge, which is visited by all worshipers. And so when the church started putting things together, we find, even though God was not limited to the tabernacle, God could be everywhere, or the sanctuary, but the tabernacle or the sanctuary was a place of the special presence and access to God. The cultic activity, that is, a religious activity, was described as taking place in God's presence. In other words, the worshipers went in and they were expecting God's presence to be there. Even if they couldn't see behind that veiled curtain, they expected that on the inside where the Ark of the Covenant was, there was God's presence. That God was visiting there. That's why later on the high priest, that one time out of the year where he could go, they tied a cord around his ankle in case he happened to get in there and he did something wrong and died of a heart attack or God struck him dead, because nobody else could go in there till you elected another high priest. So they'd drag him out. Yeah. The showbread was before the altar. You had the altar right there at the Holy of Holies, and the showbread was placed before the altar. And, you know, and the showbread was supposed to be sacred. But, you know, David ate the showbread and gave it to his men one time when he was, when they were starving. Right. Well, God, in Exodus, God gives them the measurements of what it was to be. Yes. And of course, you got to get the Ark of the Covenant in there at some point in time. So you do get to go in there. But when God's presence was there, you were not allowed in there. Not even the high priest, except for that one day out of the year, during Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. It could have, but, and if you were in the middle of a sandstorm, or if you were in the middle of a terrible thunderstorm, the first tent that got put up was the tabernacle, because that was the house of God. You didn't put up your family tent. You didn't go hide in the cave. You got out there and you erected that tent of meeting, the tabernacle. Why? Because that represented God's presence. That was the holy spot at that particular point. There were areas for worshipers then, for choirs. There were places in the sanctuary to give your tithes and offerings, to make your sacrifices, places offering meditation and instruction in the Torah. Christian churches eventually adopted that kind of, we've got the vestibule, that entrance area, where you come in preparation for entering the sanctuary, where you worship, where you offer meditation, where teaching takes place, you offer tithes and offerings. You have the altar area, which really would coincide to the platform area where the altar table is. In fact, in early churches, the altar would be up there. And actually, the priests or the ministers, though they would serve the sacrifice or do the sacrifice there or come from there with the host, they didn't stay there. They were on the sides, reading and teaching and preaching from the sides of the altar. Why? Because the focus was to be right there on where the presence of God would be, where the sacrifices would be. So, and I'm wondering if whoever wrote this might not have been present. I really wondered, since there were three in the box after the last time, and when I opened it this morning, there were five slips of paper in there. So two of them have appeared. I don't know if this one was there before or not, but I couldn't help but wonder if perhaps it showed up after the hide-and-go-seek that was taking place in the sanctuary last Wednesday night. where I got up and found two young ladies in there running up and down playing hide and seek with other people. And I simply said, no hide and seek in the sanctuary. Although a lot of people, I guess when they come in there, Jim talked about stepping on toes. I guess sometimes they try to hide. Yes. Right. There are many churches who use the worship space for or like an auditorium, and it doesn't seem to be like a sanctuary. Are the reasons to call where we worship a sanctuary? Is there supposed to be a difference between a sanctuary and an auditorium in worship? And so, I guess what I'm saying here is, from our definitions of sanctuary, and for what you all have mentioned about sacred places and places of protection, etc., in the presence of God, there is a reason for calling it a sanctuary, because we are to go expecting to encounter God. Are we not? Okay.
The sanctuary is over there.
Mm-hmm.
We're over here.
Nope. Right.
Right now. And we're worshiping God.
Yes, sir. All what? The time.
No, this is your sanctuary, just like that.
Yes,
no.
Sir.
No.
No, it's not.
Yes.
It depends on whether you want to extend that, but I guess I'm thinking where the question comes from between sanctuary is a sacred space where some things don't take place. Teaching, and see, the rabbis didn't just teach in the temple. They taught in the courts around the temple too. And so this could be, we would say, okay, we're teaching, we're learning, we're discussing, that kind of thing. But as far as exposition, the presence of God and the exposition of Scripture for the presence of God, that kind of thing, and the worship, offering sacrifices and tithes and offerings and those kinds of meditations and prayers took place. Right.
Billy Graham used to go around to different auditoriums.
Right.
Coliseums and all that stuff. Those you probably know. Would thought God had been present?
Yes. You would expect God to be present, just as God is present in other places. I don't know what was meant here, the difference in auditorium and sanctuary. But I'm thinking perhaps the whole idea of a sacred space where things are done a little bit differently than a rock concert or out in the rest of the world. More formal space as opposed to an auditorium. Yeah, that's right. That's a good way to put it. No. Right. Right. More like the auditorium or the small gathering place, yes. That's a good way to put it, Robert. A more formal place. True. People, but why would they go to a sanctuary to pray as opposed to just off in an auditorium? Some people. Maybe not everybody. We can pray anywhere, but some. Right. Yeah, the sanctuary would be, and probably more people who look that way, the sanctuary, it's a sacred space, a formal sacred space where the approach to God is not flippant and, okay, presence of God. Right. Yeah, most Catholic churches are left unlocked. But it is very formal, and people typically know especially if they're Catholics or if they've been around there, even if they're not, that that is a sacred space where they go and they look at the images, the icons, and it's where it's more sacred. Okay. And I think some of it also probably has to do with our ideas of what church is and what it's about and the attitude. Guy Sales, Baptist writer, Guy Sales, talked about when he was a child growing up. And he said, while a lot of my friends thought that worship was dull, worship was hardly ever dull for me, in part because I was so captivated by the idea that Jesus Christ, who had been crucified so long ago, was in fact alive and walking around in the church while we were singing and listening to the sermon. If Jesus might at any moment tap me on the shoulder and say something, how could worship ever be dull? And And I guess, you know, if that's our, you know, and he's a minister now, but he said that's how he felt growing up. And that's what he had been taught, that in this space and during this time where we're worshiping God and we're reflecting upon Jesus and upon how we're to live, that Jesus is alive, right? We say Jesus is alive, and Jesus, for him, he was awestruck that Jesus might be walking around in here while they were singing and praying and listening to the preacher, and Jesus might actually tap him on the shoulder and say something to him. Of course, it probably scream and jump up. Yeah, bailing out. But maybe, perhaps, the way we look at it really may deal more with our attitude, how we look at it, and what the space was intended to be, and how we reflect that. There was a Doonesbury cartoon some time back, and Mike in Doonesbury was talking with the pastor of, he was outside of the church, and the sign was the Little Church of Walden. And so Mike, in talking with him, says, "So, how'd your new church get started, Rev?" "Aerobics." "Aerobics?" And he said, "Yeah. I needed something to attract folks from the community. The focus group suggested an aerobics class. It worked, so I added yoga and bingo. And then later a few 12-step programs, and then we opened a soup kitchen, which led to cooking lessons and cooking classes. Before I knew it, I had my own denomination." And then Mike says, "Wow, so that's how religion spreads." Which says something about our attitude toward, I guess, sanctuary or auditorium, our attitude toward worship, and what is there. By the way, I've only got 3 pages, little pages. When I started, I pulled out all these pages. So, is there a difference? Is there supposed to be a difference between a sanctuary and an auditorium? Clear. And in the moon. No. George had brought that big clear jar with a spout on it with water the other night. And so he left it there and he picked it up to go. Okay. It depends on the individual.
I personally could not worship in an auditorium.
No, no.
Lighthouse
in the second. Okay. Yeah, and a lot of times it has something to do with what what you call it. And he's tall and... No. Ed?
God is everywhere.
Praise right.
He's just not in the sanctuary of this church. He's in Asia, Africa, so forth and so on. And they could all have their own temples for him and everything else when you get right down to it.
So right.
His omnipresence or whatever.
With his omnipresence. But do they, for example, do they have specific spaces, though, that are considered more sacred? Typically, where there is an altar or an altar table.
I think it's got to be tangible.
No, but it doesn't have to be, but that would be considered more sanctuary.
Well, you remember the first Christians had to meet in the secret and it would move from place to place and everything else.
Well, they did later. The earliest ones actually met in the synagogue after Sabbath was over. But then when they start getting persecuted, yes, they meet in homes. They go to places in homes, but they would set up an altar in a particular room, or they would... one of the things they did avoid, they go to the catacombs sometimes, or caves. One of the things they did avoid was sacred groves of trees, because those were so associated with pagan deities and that kind of thing.
Well, they, back in those days, too, they built a lot of altars, like
right.
I didn't mean that I didn't feel like I was in touch with God.
Oh, no. Well, what goes on, the attitude with which you come and what you put into it, therefore, is related to what you sense and what occurs within you.
We have to look at a lot of third world countries.
Yeah. Right.
We have to look at a lot of third world countries
might just build one room with a dirt floor.
Right.
That's the only church they
have. Right. Well, it is. But in those third world countries, that right. Well, but to them at that, and it may have, and I think it has to do with the point of what's taking place there. It's not an altar for them. That's a sacred space when they go there.
Well, it is for all of us too.
Right.
All of us wouldn't be dressed like we are.
No.
In the sanctuary.
I think your sanctuary should be anywhere holy,
you worship God,
sir. Whether it be out on the beach, deep in the woods, beside the lake.
No.
You can have your own sanctuary.
Right. Yeah, and that's what Robert said a while ago. Formal.
And we're getting into
Maxie.
People come into the churches and they swimsuits with something over them and they're both behind them and these kind of churches. We're getting into that.
Well, there have been a number of situations even before the big boxes came around where people were less formal, and where a lot of times it's more we show up, we do this, but then we can get out, we're already dressed to go somewhere else, kind of thing. And once again, that gets back to attitude.
And I've had someone say to me,
attitude. Well, and I started to say, because you don't sit there and during a sermon and think, well, where am I going to go to eat or what am I going to order? But there's some people that do that. there's some people that write out the grocery list, you know, or whatever. But it has a lot to do with attitude. But I also think that it has a lot to do with, and especially in the postmodern era, it's tougher to teach people about sacredness. It's more, a lot of times, especially in, not in all, but in some of the big boxes, it's more about, this is what my idea is, and God will conform to it, instead of, we've got a place where we conform to God. And I think in some instances, that's where, for me, the term, and of course, then again, I am a young dinosaur, but for me, the term sanctuary fits better in describing that space, because that's where there's some expectation of meeting God in a particular way that is different, that is other than the Bon Secours, the Bon Seekers Wellness Center, yeah. Or what used to be the Bilo Center, yeah. The well. Well, you know, Jacob was in trouble in a well. No, excuse me, Joseph was in trouble in a well. But does it make a difference? How and where? Depends. Worship is derived from the old English worthsippi, which means to worship a person or an institution which has the greatest of value. And sometimes I think that we can get to the point where we become so casual and familiar that the question can be raised, is this worship of the one who is the most valuable, of greatest value? That is God. You know, in the Old Testament, or in the Judeo-Christian tradition, God alone is worthy of that kind of worship. And worship was linked to feeling a sense of transcendence and a sense of the otherness of God. As things went along, I mean, this is God who made covenants, who rescues us, who calls us to repent, who renews that covenant. Worship included building altars to memorialize those experiences. And the sanctuary was a place not only to encounter God, but to remember those experiences, which change us. Congregational worship actually, anybody know when congregational worship actually began? Not just Christian, but worshiping as congregations. We already talked about it. In the Mosaic period.
Oh.
Before that, you had individual altars, and you had family altars, and you had town shrines, but worshiping as a congregation, a large group, begins with the building of the tabernacle in the time of Moses. Because all the people then were called to that tabernacle to worship together. The tabernacle was, for the tabernacle, a priesthood was established, a body of interpreters of the law who called the people together to teach them and then urge them to hear God and to respond. Later on, as I said, the temple was built, and during the building of the temple in Jerusalem under Solomon, worship then becomes centralized and more formal. In fact, Solomon kind of took formality to the nth degree. But all of the ministries of the church arise out of gathered worship. The impetus, their foundation, arises out of gathered worship. Gathered worship is where we come together to sing, to pray, to meditate, to offer worship to God, a God who is other than we, who is holier than we, and who calls us to that kind of holiness. And so, does it really make a difference whether you call it a sanctuary or an auditorium? I think probably that is dependent, once again, about attitude and what you convey in that place. Yes, you can worship anywhere, but as a corporate body, I think the attitude that is conveyed and the understanding that is conveyed does make a difference. And you can disagree, and that's okay too. We're Baptists. We're the kind of Baptists can disagree. There's some of those that can't. There's some of those that forget the Baptist heritage and forget that Baptists agree to disagree. Agreeably.
You know, I mentioned a while back, I went to a funeral over in Easley.
Right.
Potter's Clay Fellowship. And that was a auditorium worship. And the person that was, never do it. Come from the back.
Go ahead. I know. I always come from the back. The person that was, go ahead. I'm sorry.
The person that. That the funeral was for had the characteristics of the life of a Christian that you would find anywhere here.
Right.
Sanctuary.
Right.
And I'm sure there are a lot of people in the loop.
Oh, I think so.
And there are a lot of people that come for the red lights and the jazzy music. And this one didn't have any smoke. But,
right.
Find the other thing.
Well. And once again, you know, I say I'm a young dinosaur. But I was brought, and some of my position obviously comes out of how I was brought up and what I've seen. But, you know, I have watched, during times where rehearsals were done for plays or for musicals or decorating, and I've watched kids with their parents standing there working on it or practicing, and kids are there in what we call the sanctuary, run up down the aisles and even stepping on the tops of the pews and going like this from pew to pew. And, you know, my concern is that we at least have some space where we remember that this is a place where we encounter God in a special way. Yes, Robert.
Some of the churches that are building new buildings now.
Right.
Build a building, and then how they configure it to what they want to do with it at that,
right.
That time. Like, you know, they might not have a worship service.
Right.
They move all the chairs. They don't have.
They got basketball courts.
Yeah.
Or whatever. Aerobics.
Yeah.
And they are doing things like that. And, you know, Brookwood did it eons ago. I went to a funeral one time at Brookwood. A student that I had in a divinity school's father died, and he was, and they had the service there, and they played the canned music. And why I thought it was interesting, he worked for DNR, and he went around. They had pictures; they didn't have his jars of snakes, but he used to go around with jars of snakes and give talks on reptiles and that kind of stuff. But very nice guy, very well known guy around in DNR. Then the family lined up afterwards, you know, their pictures and all. We got in the line, and it took me 20 minutes to get there, and then I left. But during the whole 20 minutes and then some, happy trails to you. Roy Rogers was singing Happy Trails. Yeah, okay, yeah. But I will tell you, Mary, and I know we've run over and I didn't intend to tonight. Mary in doing weddings at Furman has had a number, over the years has had a number of brides and grooms who come, who go to places like Brookwood and Marathon. And she's had a couple of folks from New Spring. But she's had several from Brookwood and places like that with more of an auditorium feel as opposed to what looks like a traditional church. And she always asks. She always asks when she finds it. She says, where do you go to church? And, well, why Furman? To a couple, every couple that she has ever directed the wedding, met with and directed the wedding, who came from a big box but wanted to be married at Furman, and not all Furman alums either. Because we want to get married in a place that looks like a church and where only sacred music is played. Because only sacred or classical is allowed in the Furman Chapel during a wedding. And to a couple, when she has then asked the follow-up question, well, then why do you go to XYZ church? To a couple, the answer has been, because it's fun. Fun. And she has probably done...
I think it's fun to come here.
What? Good. Good. But, you know, here you... On the one hand, you've got, it's fun over here, but we want to get married in a place that looks and has a sacred feel to it. And so that's kind of, and I don't know where, and I don't know if you're in the room, I don't know if we answered your question or not. We talked around it maybe. We got different ideas, but that's okay. I think it's dependent upon how you look at it, but I think in either case, if it is for worship, there has to be a sense of the sacred and meeting the sacred for it to be sanctuary, even if it looks like an auditorium. And a sense that the sacred is there. I'd have a little bit of trouble, even if we had the meeting and we had devotions and we sang, I'd have a little bit of trouble while they were setting up the 10 pins behind me calling that a sanctuary. Even before the bowling ball started rolling.
That goes back to what my question was. And the question I wasn't here to ask. You know, people seek out that to go to. But what causes the person that starts that church to start it?
Well, part of what we said before, quite frankly, I think some of it is there are more people in seminaries or religion classes or whatever than there are churches out there. And people aren't retiring fast enough. And so the new thing is, well, just get a little bit of education or none at all, but you know, do whatever and then go out and start your own. Go out and start your own. And unfortunately, a lot of those turn into perpetual youth group gatherings. But in all seriousness, there are more people in seminaries, even though there's a shortage of priests for the Catholic Church, there are more people in seminaries than there are churches for those people to go to work in. Predominantly as pastors, but it's also drying up in some other areas because people are staying longer and not retiring early and all that kind of stuff. And so there, the next thing is you go out and you start one. And then instead of people coming to churches that already exist, the church planting movement is, well, we're going to go in here and we're going to set up something in a storefront, even though there are five churches within a rifle shot. Some of that is necessary because sometimes in those churches that are around there within a rifle shot, the attitude of the people who go there to folks who come in to visit turns them away. As I said before, a few years ago, Southern Baptist Convention actually had a recommendation. They had a resolution to vote on recommending that any new church that started was started by Baptists not include Baptist in the name because it brought such bad connotations, and that they even suggested that churches do a study of their own demographics who already were established with Baptist in the name and consider not changing their stance, but consider dropping the name Baptist off the building. to attract people. Because Baptists tended, we always held our fights out in the open instead of in the back rooms. Our dirty laundry we aired out front, and that gave people, you know, a bad feeling and that kind of stuff. So I don't know. And if you're the one who wrote this and you're in here, I hope we at least got somewhere near. But I appreciate y'all's input. I'm not saying you can't worship God other places. Yeah, well, yeah, that, yeah, we used to say, you know, what's the difference in the Baptist and the Episcopalian? The Episcopalian will speak to you as they leave the ABC store. So, but really, we Baptists, other people would do their battles and have their fights behind closed doors. Baptists had them out in the open. And people say, well, yeah. I can go down the street and fight with somebody. Why do I want to go there and have a fight? I think we need to remember that there and teach our children and our grandchildren that there are places where we should anticipate the presence of God and should treat them at least a little bit differently than we do the local gym. Right. 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 Yeah, we used to sing, "I love thy kingdom, Lord, the house of thine abode, the church is one foundation." But then that's not how it's treated a lot today. Well, and I've
had worship, kind of a worship experience in the afternoon after church before we went to church in the evening.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I've shared with y'all my grandparents, the Hearns, that was how it was in the living room. But on Sunday afternoons when we go visit, my grandfather Hearn would not allow us to go outside and swing on the swing set. We couldn't play hide and seek. We couldn't play tag. We couldn't turn a TV on. We had to go in the den and sit there and talk to our cousins, which was a whole lot more boring than what I did, or go in and sit there and listen to the old people talk.
As the NFL season was
right.
Ramping up,
yeah.
They were talking about this on Sunday, and there they were, the NFL on Sunday.
Yeah. Well, yeah, NFL on Sunday and some colleges on the weekend. So, but, well, it's been interesting. It's been fun. But
if you don't like to listen to old people, you think we do?
Thank you all. God bless you and go in peace.